picky eaters. Does your child refuse to eat that delicious dinner that you worked so hard preparing? Do they just look the other way or scream and rant and rave or just have a tantrum because you've put that meal on the table in front of them? It is really frustrating. It can be exhausting for parents, continuously trying to come up with something that a child will eat, something nutritious and delicious, something easy to prepare, something just that will help that child grow up to be big and strong and healthy like we want him to be. Why do some children refuse those delicious meals? I mean, they look good to us, and we might want them, and everybody else in the family might be eating them, but still there's that child who just won't eat it. Not if it's green, not if it has small pieces, not if it's all mushed up. You know, there's a whole bunch of criteria that the child will have as far as what they will eat and what they won't eat, which can leave some children eating cheese and bread for 20 years straight. Some version of cheese and pasta, or cheese and bread, seems to be something that most kids will tolerate. But there are some that won't even go for that, and they'll just have their own special selection of two or three foods that they're willing to eat. Gosh, a lot of us wish we had that disorder. You know, we're eating all the time, and, you know, everything looks good to us, and we wish that we could be turned off just so that we could lose a few pounds. But our children are coming to us that way naturally. And in fact, recent research is showing that it's really naturally. We don't make our kids into picky eaters, which is kind of good news because then we can stop feeling so terribly guilty that there's something wrong in our parenting that we did that's causing them to be like that. So, I mean, that relieves some guilt. It doesn't relieve the problem. What researchers are now finding is that some children love food. They love all kinds of foods. And some children really just don't like eating, or they don't like anything to do with oral stimulation, what goes into their mouth. And they're just born that way. Or they're very, very fussy about textures, about tastes. Sometimes it's because they actually have certain allergies or sensitivities to some kind of food. But usually it's not even that. It's something to do with the fear and disgust of certain kinds of flavors, textures, and sensual criteria like that. So, you know, the child can't help it, and the parent didn't cause it. Still, we have to know how to handle it if that child is our child. We have to know what to do, because parents can actually create a bit of a eating disorder or a problem. I won't even say disorder, because I'm not going to call picky eating a disorder. But what I meant is, when I said that parents can create an eating disorder, is that they can create a battleground over food so that every meal is a fight. Or every snack, even in some households, every time the child puts food into his mouth, it's going to be some sort of battle between parent and child. And that, in my opinion, will create a disorder of some kind. Not necessarily an eating disorder, but a parent-child disorder, a disorder in the relationship. So we really don't want that, we don't want that going on there. So we want to have a healthy relationship with our children, and we don't want to have tension over mealtime or really over anything else. So from that point of view, we're going to deal with picky eating as any other parenting dilemma. We're going to keep in mind important parenting requirements, like establishing a positive relationship first and foremost. So if there's anything we want from a child, whether we want that child to do her homework, or we want her to go to bed on time, or we want any kind of behavior, compliance, cooperation, the way to increase the chances of getting it is to maintain an overall positive relationship with the child. We can't zero in on the homework, or the bedtime, or the getting up in the morning, or the eating. We cannot zero in on the child's problem behavior, because when we do that, it will seem to the child that all we see is what's wrong with the child. And that will create that distortion in the parent-child relationship, which will lead, ironically, to less compliance, less cooperation, less willingness to try. So because eating happens so many times a day, this is one area in which we want to be very careful not to get involved in struggle and conflict. Of course, in general, In general parenting, we don't want to be involved in struggle and conflict with our children. Even if the children are contrary or difficult in their own natures, we parents don't want to play that game with them. We don't want to have a knocking horns sort of relationship with them where they provoke us and we provoke back and we fight it out with them. So as long as we're clear that however we go about solving the picky eating dilemma, it will not be with a battle of wills, then we'll be in the right page, we'll be in the right department for thinking about this. It's not like we're going to fight with the child about eating, okay? So what are we going to do? What can we do to help a child who has a sensitivity to food? Okay, and again, not the child's fault. It's genetically inherited. Probably you were like that when you were a kid. Maybe you drove your mother nuts as well. So, or even if you weren't like that, somebody has the genes somewhere in your family and passed it on. Or maybe it was your spouse's side, you know. Can always blame the spouse. So, let's look at some principles that can help children just be as healthy as possible with regards to their attitude towards food. And keep in mind that pediatricians say that as long as your child is growing and thriving, then you don't have that much to be concerned about. Now, we can be particular. Like, we want our child to have the best of everything. We don't want just the kid to get a C average in school and just slide by with a pass. You know, we want him to get an A+. And we feel that way certainly about our child's health. We don't want the child to just be growing taller. We want that child to have healthy cells and have a good immune system and just, you know, be building a foundation for a healthy body for life. Keep in mind that conflict erodes a child's health. So it also erodes a parent's health. So you don't want to stress yourself out or stress the child out about food, because whatever vitamins you manage to shove down their little throats will actually get wasted because of the emotional processing issues going on with the child. Feels like there was a fight, a battle, a bad scene. The child feels bad, or like he's disappointed you, or, you know, any of that stuff. He's not going to be very physically healthy. There's a lot of evidence to show that happy mental state, happy emotional state, is very much associated with good health. Okay, so it's not all about the carrots and the cucumbers and all that stuff. Okay, now, you want your child to be relaxed when it comes to food and when it comes to you and when it comes to himself. So if your doctor says that the child is healthy, please do use that as a criteria. If your doctor's concerned, then you're going to need your doctor's advice about how to handle the child's eating disorder or eating problem, whatever is manifesting there. When it becomes a medical problem, then you will need real medical intervention in addition to what I'm going to tell you here. So I'm going to assume that your child is actually running around the house very actively, that your child is not sick every minute of the day. Because if the child has a lot of immune weakness that leads to constant sickness of different kinds, you do need to take that up with the doctor. Okay, so with the healthy child, you want to show your child that food is not his enemy, right? Food is fun. And you can model that attitude for him yourself, right? That you enjoy your food, that you sit at the table, and you make it obvious that you enjoy your food. So you're eating a large variety of foods, and you're showing the child that you're willing to try new foods. Because, you know, it could be that you may eat more foods than your child, but if somebody puts something new in front of you, what do you do about that? Do you just dive right in and eat it? Or do you make faces? Or do you refuse to try it because it's not something you know about? I mean, you know, you could check that out, because really we're asking children a lot to try things that are new for them. And then we're upset with them that they're not eager to do that. But, you know, after we've established our 20 top foods, I mean, I don't know if any of us are willing to go too far into the unknown with food for ourselves. So let's be respectful of the child's natural fear and concern about trying new foods. But meanwhile, we're making it look like we at least enjoy eating. This is good. Is this not good? This is delicious. Would you like another piece? And so on, you know, around the table. Just showing that you enjoy food, okay? Also, that food is not a very serious matter, that you're willing to make fun with food, that you can make food look interesting, You know, children like to play with everything, and although we usually discourage them from playing with their food, it's really fine to make a face on their plate with some vegetables and bananas and whatever it is, and make eyes and nose and mouth and curly hair with all of whatever you're putting on their plate, or turn their bagel into a little person somehow, or whatever it is you're serving. You can make it fun. Just, again, to reduce the threatening aspect of food, to make it a friendly time, just to have a nice attitude coming along with that food. If you're introducing some new foods to your child, don't expect them to ever eat a whole plate of anything, right? Yeah, I'm sure that you're already onto this one, but just a reminder, give little spoonfuls of new foods. Offer little new spoonfuls, and if the child doesn't want it, don't keep pushing it, right? Don't keep saying, oh, just try one, just try it, just take a little bit, you know. Don't make a battle. Just say, okay, and then pass it around to other people and let them go, delicious, can I have some more of that? Because the child's natural curiosity may eventually kick in. When I say it may eventually, I want to also point out that picky eaters may not grow out of their actual pickiness until they're almost grown up or even grown up. A lot of people, when they get married, is around the first time when they're willing to try a new few, a few new foods, just so not to be ridiculous with their own spouse. They may branch out a little bit or slowly into adulthood. They realize that, well, something changes in their body and they're able to tolerate more strange things, new things, different things than they were before. And it sort of works out that adults tend to eat a wider variety of food than any child. Although there are some kids who are super eaters, and they'll eat everything, no matter what you put in front of them. But picky eating is not that rare in childhood. So the kids who are very limited in what they want to eat, I don't know if they're in the majority, they might be, okay? It's pretty common, let's put it that way. Nothing for you to get hysterical about or really, really worried about, because kids don't need the kind of food that we think they do. They need just little amounts of nutrition, and they can get that fairly easily, probably from what they are getting. It's the rare child who is not getting a fairly balanced diet, even though his foods are limited. So it's just that our idea of like a varied diet is much broader than what a child may want. So, you know, we have to be sensitive to the child's rhythms, and don't try make a child eat anything when they're not hungry. Don't expect them to eat a lot of anything or to eat at all if they're not hungry. We want to respect their appetite, but we want to help their appetite along. It's not going to help a child to give him some sugary snack before dinner time, even if that sugary snack is cereal. Some people go like, well, you know, he's hungry and he won't eat anything other than those sugar pop things, so that's what I give him. Well, if you're going to do that, your picky eater will continue to be more picky than she needs to be, because sugar will satisfy the appetite and the child will not have any need to try food, real food, right? So we want to, even though we're tempted, oh, she won't eat anything except ice cream, so I give her ice cream, you know, for every meal, before every meal, after every meal, during every meal. You know, don't get into that. It's not necessary, and it's very counterproductive. Make the snacks that are available little healthy snacks, right? And even if they're the same snack day after day because the child just likes the same one, it's okay. He can have his cheese and his cracker, or his cheese and his apple, if he's willing to eat that, or his cheese and his applesauce, whatever it is he's willing to eat, or just his cheese even, right? And then when it comes time to dinner, serve real food. Now, some people say, well, you know, if the child will only eat stuff with ketchup on it, then pour ketchup all over everything, right? And some people do that for their kids. I personally don't think that that's the way to encourage a child to try new foods or to eat new things. I think that ketchup itself is basically like pouring sugar on everything, and again, has some sort of effect on the appetite, such that the child will be less inclined to try real food or to eat a wide variety of foods. So although I think that sauces are great because they can enhance the flavor of foods, if you can make a tasty sauce, try not to have it laden with sugar, right? Use spices. What people have found is that in some countries where the cooking is done with a lot of spices, the children are much more willing to eat all kinds of things that North American children just don't want to touch. I mean, peas, plain peas from a can or frozen peas, they really, you know, they're boring. So a lot of adults won't eat that. To make a dish tasty, it may need to be sautéed, or it may need to have a wide variety of spices on it, and then it becomes delicious enough for even a picky eater to be to enjoy it. And also, this picky eating thing often kicks in after a child did have a wider variety of foods. Like in infancy, when parents are introducing foods, some babies will actually eat a fair amount and then become picky when they're toddlers, which it's pretty common. So just bear with it, because again, it's common for the child to grow out of that at some point, and the last point being adulthood. And a lot of kids grow out of it in childhood as well, so just keep that in mind too. Now, getting back to what you can do for your picky eater, you can be flexible. It's okay to eat breakfast for dinner, for example, so you can have pancakes at dinner time or French toast at dinner time or even cereal at dinner time, as long as you're having cereal that has got some nutrition in it. You might have oats. Again, not the sugar-laden oats, but oats with salt and butter and milk and perhaps dried fruit. And you can try these things first. If your child isn't eating any fruit or vegetables, then sometimes you can use one of those blender operations, whether it's a food processor or a magic bullet or something like that, to add vegetables to things that they will eat. For example, there's broccoli muffins, there's carrot cake. Now, these things do have sugar, but if the child is going to eat some cake or muffins, zucchini cake, all of those things actually have a hefty serving of vegetables in it. If you look at the recipes for those, you require, you know, 3 cups of shredded carrots and, you know, whatever for a decent carrot cake, and same thing for zucchini cake. There's real vegetables in those, so you can feel a little bit better about the child eating it. And some of you, if you have time to bake, might be able to use some flowers that are really, you sneak them into the recipe. An interesting food that I've recently discovered is chia seeds. Now, this may sound peculiar, but chia seeds have really a lot of nutrients packed in those little seeds. And when you soak them in water for about 10 minutes or 15 minutes, the seeds expand and make a kind of like a jello texture, a liquid. And you can add that liquid to any recipe that you're baking or cooking with, to pancakes, to breads, to cookies, to cakes, to muffins, to pizza dough, to anything that calls for a cup of milk or a cup of water or a cup of soya beverage, whatever it is, you can substitute the chia seed mixture, which is called a chia slurry, S-L-U-R-R-Y. What you do is you take the soaked chia seeds and give them a whirl for about a minute in your magic bullet or food processor so that they get all white and foamy, and then you use that. Well, when a child is eating that snuck into his food, he's getting protein, a very high dose of omega-3s, apparently the best quality omega-3 that there is in the food world, and all kinds of calcium and minerals and iron and all kinds of hard-to-find nutrients. You can do a little bit of research on that yourself on the Internet for recipe ideas or for just understand the content of it, because chia seeds, when they're mixed like that, have absolutely no taste, and they're invisible in the recipe that you use them in. So there's one way that, you know, and there's all kinds of books, you know, for sneaky cooks that I'm sure you're familiar with. If you're not, take a look at the bookstore and ask your children's librarian, because a lot of people are finding creative ways to sneak fruits and vegetables into regular recipes such that the child doesn't even notice it's there. If a child will only eat pasta, well, even in pasta, some children are so fussy, for example, that they won't eat pasta with sauce. They just want plain pasta, okay? But there's high-quality pasta with high doses of protein, and it tastes exactly the same as the low-quality pasta, which has very little nutrients in it. So shop around in your health food store, or even nowadays in your regular supermarket, and serve the pasta that taste that has some nutrients in it. In fact, the first pasta that you should ever serve your kids should be the high nutrient one, so that the child thinks that that is what pasta is. That becomes the pasta that he's addicted to. I could say the same thing for bread. If you have a bread machine and you want to power pack your bread with nutrients so that you don't worry about it, so that your child is, you know, eating a bread made of chia seeds and all kinds of flax seeds and, you know, all kinds of high protein flours that you throw in there, and the child won't notice it because you can't really notice it in bread. And then let the kid eat his bread and cheese, and then you can sort of be smiling to yourself like, yeah, he only eats bread and cheese, but what bread and cheese? You know, it's really, really good for him. But again, whether the child eats it or doesn't eat it, don't fight. Just put everything out there and enjoy it, okay? Sometimes kids will just not eat food that's being mixed together, so they want a separate part of their plate for a vegetable, a separate part for their carbohydrate or protein, you know, like everything has to be separate. They don't want you to mix things like a tuna casserole. They just won't eat. Other kids would only eat the tuna if it's embedded in a tuna casserole. So you have to know your picky eater, but honor your picky eater's preferences. Don't make comments about it. Don't make it an issue. Just put food out and don't comment on what you don't eat. You never eat anything. Why don't you eat anything? Like, don't even get into that dialogue, even with a little toddler. Just don't make food an issue. Never force your child to finish eating the food on his or her plate, because instead of following the child's own inner messages that the child has from his gut, that he's full or not full, you're trying to have a child externalize that to eat according to somebody else's standard. And that is not a good thing as far as nutritional health in the future will go. We want a child to know when to stop eating and to honor that. So we can say, are you full? Okay, you've had enough. Okay. You know, now that doesn't mean that you have to run a 24-hour kitchen, because if the child's going to come back later in 10 minutes and want to start eating again, or in an hour and want to start eating again, you don't have to, you know, start cooking again, right? So you can have things like, well, you know, I'll put the rest of your dinner over here and you can come get it later, again, without making a big issue. Or you can say, well, okay, you're welcome to finish. I'm not serving any more tonight. Next breakfast, you know, meal is breakfast. It's really up to you how you want to run your house on that one and how old the children are. Because little children, let's say under the age of 8 or so, they really do better with a lot of tiny meals a day. They don't need to have a big breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Especially the younger the child, the more that is true. So toddlers in particular are better off eating every hour or two than having, you know, 5 or 6 hours between meals like adults would go. So, you know, if you're able to comply with it, then you just have a selection of their foods and nutritionally wise foods available to them throughout the day in an easy, non-threatening, non-combative way. There it is. It's on the table. It's in the fridge. It's here. I'll get it for you. You know, but that does not mean I'm going to start cooking fresh pasta for you at 1 a.m. because now you're hungry and you didn't eat enough at dinner. Okay, we have to be normal about it. We have to set our limits. So a kid is supposed to be in bed, you know, sleeping at that time. We're not cooking food because he didn't eat earlier. So that child will learn to eat a little bit more. We don't offer food as a reward for eating healthy food. If you serve dessert, you know, maybe you serve it on special occasions on Friday night or on Shabbos throughout the day or at parties, etc., then the dessert is served, okay? I would not get into a habit of serving dessert at every meal because, again, that much sugar really wreaks havoc with the normal appetite of the child. So the child only learns to eat sugar and will avoid food that tastes, in comparison to sugar, regular food just tastes bland. When adults stop eating sugar, they are often amazed at how good regular food tastes. Like, they're just like, wow, this is fantastic apple. I can't believe how amazing it is. Right? But a person who's eating sugar all the time may not have that same appreciation at all for regular foods. So, you know, help your child out that way. You can certainly involve your child in food preparation and food shopping. You know, ask your child what they want. But again, don't criticize the child. Say, you know, if you don't want to buy the box of cookies that the child's picking out, to say, oh, those do look good, don't they? Too bad they have so much sugar and we can't eat those. You know, like, you know, but at least appreciate the child's preferences. Also, probably it's a good idea to limit juice, even milk. Although milk has some nutrients, liquid calories tend to interfere with the child's regular appetite. So, but juice is particularly problematic because juice is just sugar. Okay, so all the sugar things are really going to mess you up there. So, it's better to have your child drink water and have an orange or a slice of apple once during the day. The juice stuff is really not worth it in terms of what the damage does to your child's appetite. And it's just a sugar running through his system. It's not. A lot of people say that juices are not even a good idea for anybody to, I mean, fruit juices, right? Fruit juices, to just, like orange juice, to live on that stuff. It's not a good idea. It's just sugar and acid running through the system. Rather, give your child the fruit and let him eat it. So there it is. Those are some starting ideas. Keep to a regular, you know, even though you're serving your child whatever you want in between, do have a house that is pretty orderly when it comes to foods, that there is a breakfast and a lunch and a dinner, although the child can have snacks before and after that are healthy. But having a house that is calm food-wise, right? It's not chaotic, is also a good idea. Just, you know, just you be relaxed about it. Let the child grow into eating. Don't make issues of it. Cooperate with the child as much as possible. And don't force anything, right? And just be relaxed around the food. And that's the most that you can do to start off with to help your picky eater.